I didn't feel so great until I saw the city.
Well, we've been on hiatus for a little while since the end of the Wild regular season. I think my last podcast was with Wild General Manager Billy Guerin, where we talked a lot about the potential Kevin Fiala trade. And welcome back to Straight from the Source. Kevin Fiala has finally been traded, and this has been a year in the making, basically. I think we've been talking about this possibility on about every single podcast that I've done, both my one that I do on the Talk North Network and the one I do here on The Athletic, for about every podcast, really, for the last year. The writing was on the wall last season when the Wild bought out Zach Parise and Ryan Suter, that essentially, if you did the math, bought them 1 year of Kevin Fiala. The club had trouble negotiating a 3-year deal with Kevin Fiala, is the way that I understand it. They offered him over 6. It was rejected. That's when they decided to elect club arbitration, which we know is very, very rare in the NHL. And the two sides settled on a 1-year deal in the $5 million range. And I give Kevin Fiala credit. He got off to an awful start last season. Not just a bad, 2 weeks, a bad month, a bad 6 weeks. It was a bad 2.5 months. I mean, he did not start to break out until just before the Winter Classic. And then obviously when Matt Boldy got here, he just completely broke out with Boldy, and the two of them were just incredible, duo to watch really the entire second half of the season. Kevin went on a couple of torrid runs and winds up with 33 goals, 85 points, and that guaranteed that the Wild were not going to be able to afford him. But you just knew the entire second half. I mean, we knew the entire season that the Wild were moving on from Kevin after 1 year. But when Bill Guerin made the decisions to extend Jordan Greenway at $3 million, and then he brought in Tyson Jost at $2 million, and he signed John Merrill to the 3-year deal at $1.2 million, and then the last thing, which made it completely obvious, when they just gave Alex Goligoski, in the middle of being healthy, scratched 3 games in a row, $2 million a year on an extension, you just knew that they were not saving the money that would be necessary to sign Kevin Fiala long-term. And so Kevin now goes to the LA Kings for a first-round pick, and defenseman Brock Faber, a second-round pick. He was the defensive player of the year in the Big Ten last year, first-team all-Big Ten, real quality defenseman. So the Wild get 2 assets for Kevin Fiala. We'll talk more about that in a couple seconds. So Kevin goes to the LA Kings, and then he immediately signs an extension at 7 years at a shade over $8 million a year, $55.125 million. It comes to $7.875 million a year. And so now the Wild will have to contend with Kevin Fiala and the LA Kings for the foreseeable future. Not surprisingly, we know that Bill Guerin is bold with these type of things, and a lot of GMs would have been like, I'm only trading him to the East. But in Bill Guerin's opinion, he didn't care about putting Kevin into the Western Conference, the team the Wild are going to have to go up against to make the playoffs, or maybe even in the playoffs in the future. And we know Kevin. I mean, Kevin's wired a different way. He's going to have an axe to grind with this organization for a long time as well. But good for Kevin. He gets his money. He had a huge year and showed last year what a special talent he is. Now, this was a very, very hard trade to make. And a lot of this is conjecture, but a lot of this is talking to people around the league, sources, other teams, agents, people inside the organization. But everybody in the league knew the Wild couldn't afford Kevin Fiala. So right away, your backs are against the wall from that perspective. The other thing is Kevin was 1 year from unrestricted free agency. So he really determined where he would go, from the sense of say the New Jersey Devils wanted him, say the Ottawa Senators wanted him, the New York Islanders wanted him. The reality is, if he didn't convey to them after a conversation that Bill Guerin allowed his agents to have with those teams that he would sign there long term, well, are those teams going to give up significant pieces for him? Most definitely not. And so, I don't know. I think a lot of it was conjecture. Like the New Jersey Devils, I don't think that they were as interested in Kevin Fiala as we all thought they were. And regardless, they weren't giving up the number 2 pick. They weren't giving up their top prospects unless they knew Kevin Fiala was going to sign there long term. I do think that New Jersey has other plans in mind right now. They are going to get an impact forward or two this offseason. But I think one thing that hurt the trade potential also with Kevin Fiala is not just the power that Kevin had here in sort of determining where he was going to go by based on where he was willing to sign long term, but the fact that the market right now for skilled forwards is very, very flooded. It sounds like David Pastrnak won't be traded, but if he's on the market, that changes everything. If Alex DeBrincat is indeed being shopped, that changes everything. Brock Besser, JT Miller, Mark Scheifele, Dubois. There's a lot of names out that are floating around right now that sort of makes multiple options for teams that would hurt Bill Guerin's leverage here. And then you take the unrestricted free agents, guys like Johnny Gaudreau and players like that. Like maybe Gaudreau is a great possibility for New Jersey. I think we all had him sort of postmarked for Philly, but maybe John Tortorella being there right now changes things, right? So maybe he goes to a team like Jersey, and maybe that's one reason why New Jersey wasn't all in on a guy like Kevin Fiala. The one thing that fans reacted to yesterday that I don't necessarily disagree with, but I sometimes think that Bill Guerin is just saying it to sort of protect the anonymity of teams that were interested in him or things like that, is that when he says that he's not trying to win a trade, that he's just trying to make a fair deal. I think that gave the impression that and that also he didn't want to leverage teams against each other. You know, I think that gave the impression that maybe if he waited another week and was more patient going into the draft and waited for those pressure points, that teams would wind up coming at him with better offers. And, you know, I just think that we don't know the conversations that Bill Guerin's having. Maybe after those feeling out processes that he had with teams from the Eastern Conference, that he realized that the trade offers weren't getting better, or maybe he really just loved Brock Faber. Maybe he just sat there and said to himself, you know what? Right now, if I wait and play games with the LA Kings, they're going to go and after one of these other forwards, and I'm going to lose a potential trading partner. And maybe at the end of the day, Bill Guerin's like, I better just make the deal now. So look, I'm not privy of all those conversations. And a lot of that, what I just said is conjecture, but I think that the reality is that none of us know what was on the other lines during those things. For people to just come out and say the Wild made a bad trade because they didn't go get Alex Holtz or something. You know, it's just foolish to think that the Devils were going to give up their top prospect if Kevin Fiala was not going to sign there long term. And I don't get the impression that he would have, especially when you know that he can go to a place like LA and live nice for a long, long time and be a mainstay on a team that's on the rise, by the way. Suddenly they have centers coming down the pike and things like that. The one thing that surprised me is getting a defenseman. Like, I personally think that, like, I thought all along that it would be a first round pick and a prospect, but I always figured that prospect would be another forward or a center, because that's where this team is light on. They have an abundance of really quality defense prospects, but what they don't have an abundance of real quality defense prospects is a guy on the right side. And this is a team that scouts the University of Minnesota a lot. They have a high affinity for Brock Faber, and maybe this is total conjecture, and this is the type of thing that would tick Billy Guerin off, as because we know what he always thinks of Matt Dumba speculation. But this is potential Matt Dumba replacement insurance. If they don't think that Kalen Addison, that guy, is that guy, or even if they think that Kalen Addison has a chance to be that guy, having two potential possibilities of replacing Matt Dumba if he leaves in a year, it makes a lot of sense. And the reality, in my opinion, is it makes very little sense to re-sign Matt Dumba long-term, to extend him now. I think that if you use him as a trade piece come trade deadline time, you can get a boatload for him. Even if he was willing to take a haircut on his $6 million a year, I just think that money could be used elsewhere, potentially in better mechanisms. So Brock Faber is somebody that they have a real big appreciation for. I got a text message from a Big Ten coach right after the trade, basically asking me to, try to get the Wild to sign him immediately, because that's how impactful Brock Faber is defensively for the University of Minnesota. We saw a lot of those games last year between Michigan and Minnesota with those incredible Michigan forwards that they had, how well Brock Faber played against them. I talked to him yesterday. He's super excited to be here. A lot of people thought that maybe he was going the mold of Adam Fox and was going to try to become a free agent and pick his spot in a couple years because he didn't sign with the LA Kings when they wanted to this year. Well, that won't be a problem for the Wild. I guarantee you this kid, after talking to him yesterday, is going to sign with the Wild after this this year. He has long wanted to play for this organization. He refers to him as we. He is a Jonas Brodin fanatic, molds his game after Brodin. And I think that he is just super excited to put on the jersey for a team that he's rooted on for many, many years. I talked to his coach, Bob Motzko, yesterday, too, who went on and on about what kind of world-class skater he is, world-class defender he is, and how he thinks he's going to have a long career and be an impactful defenseman in the NHL. He feels his offense is growing. That's one area where Brock has not excelled, really, at the collegiate level. But internationally, he has put up points. So we'll see if he's able to do that here. But look, I mean, Matt Dumba hasn't put up a ton of points lately either. But you look at his analytics, and he's one of the best puck exiters in the NHL, getting that puck up out of the D zone and on transition. And that's one area where Brock Faber has always really been good at. So we'll see what it turns out to be. The other part of this trade is I got Judd Brackett here on the podcast today, which I don't know if I've mentioned, by the way, yet. And Judd now has another chip in his arsenal here to use in the draft July 7th and 8th in Montreal. This is somebody that's had a couple real quality drafts at the helm of the Wild's draft table. This will be the first draft that's in person next week in Montreal. And now, instead of having one first round pick and seven picks and three picks in the top 56, they get for the second year in a row two first round picks, eight draft picks, and four picks in the top 56. The two other picks being in the second round, one the 47th pick originally owned by the Vancouver Canucks, and that they got in the trade for Jack McBain from Arizona, and the other a compensatory pick for not signing Philip Johansson, who coincidentally goes to the Vancouver Canucks. So the Canucks get their second round pick back that they traded to Arizona originally, coincidentally from the Minnesota Wild. So we'll see what Judd Brackett can do in this upcoming draft. I have a lot of questions, thanks to you guys that are listening, that submitted questions for Judd that we'll be talking to him about as well. In terms of other things going on, let's see. We talked to Bill Guerin yesterday about what he anticipates for the upcoming draft. The Wild have $7.383 million of cap space coming up heading into free agency July 13th. Well, two of those two spots need to be reserved for forwards as of now. One, the replacement for Kevin Fiala, and two, a 13th forward. Now, one of those players likely will be Marco Rossi. He would be a cap hit of $863,000, and then they would have to get another forward, whether that be an impactful guy or maybe a 13th forward. Maybe it's re-signing Nick Delorier, which hasn't happened yet, but Bill Guerin has shown an appetite for wanting to bring him back. Then probably $2 to $3 million will need to be reserved for Jake Middleton, and then the rest of that would need to be reserved for another goalie, either a 1B to go with Cam Talbot or a backup. And the hope from Bill Guerin's perspective is that Marc-Andre Fleury is that guy. There's going to be conversations here in the next little while between Marc-Andre Fleury, Bill Guerin, and Marc-Andre Fleury and his agent and Bill Guerin, and they'll see if they can get it done maybe at a contract around Cam Talbot's 3.67. If not, they are going to have to go get another backup. Bill Guerin was honest yesterday and said that he feels like that goalie that they would get tag team with Cam Talbot probably wouldn't be the caliber of a Marc-Andre Fleury, but we'll see what's out there. I'm hyperlinked to my story today, one of my many stories today that you can go look at, which would be pointing out the potential goalie options out there this summer. There are the guys like Darcy Kemper and Ville Husso and players like that, but then there are the true number twos, the Casey DeSmith at this stage in his career, Braden Holtby, goalies like that, Thomas Greiss. So you can look at that in the Athletic. And then the other option, of course, is trading for a goalie. So we'll see what Bill Guerin has up his sleeve from that perspective yet, but the fact that Marc-Andre Fleury hasn't re-signed yet might be a little bit of a sign that maybe he's not going to. We'll see. I'm sure that Bill Guerin is going to try to twist his arm here in the next 13 days, because obviously he's going to need to know a plan and how to get going here in terms of getting another goalie if Marc-Andre Fleury isn't coming back. My guest today, as I mentioned, is Director of Amateur Scouting, Judd Brackett. In fact, later this upcoming month here, I'm actually flying to Newport, Rhode Island for my cousin's wedding. I'm actually going to make a pit stop. I'm going to fly into Boston, rent a car. I'm going out to Cape Cod, and I'm going to sit down with Judd Brackett at one of his restaurants that he owns with his brother out there called The Port. It's a really high-end, staple in Cape Cod, the way I understand it, a seafood and steak restaurant. We're going to sit down at that restaurant, and I'm going to work on a feature on him to run some point in August. So this won't be the only time I'll be talking to Judd Brackett here. We got the podcast. We obviously have next week in Montreal after 2 days of draft, and then I'll be actually seeing him later this month in Cape Cod, which, by the way, I've never been to Cape Cod, so looking forward to spending a day there. Without further ado, we'll get to Judd Brackett, but here's a word from one of our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And as mentioned, very happy to be joined by former collegiate goalie star Judd Brackett, Wild director of amateur scouting. Your third draft, but this is going to be like your first real draft with the Wild, because we're actually going to see you on a draft floor in Montreal next week.
Yes, very generous of you too to call me a collegiate star. I really appreciate that. But no, this is going to be great to be in the arena, to be on stage, to be at the table. A full year of work and culmination in Montreal. So we're excited.
And we're doing this podcast. You are in Edmonton at your son's tournament, which I swear I'm pretty positive you were there last year when we did this podcast, right?
I believe it or not, I was in Vegas.
That's what it was. What it was. I remember that. And that was nice of you to actually do that podcast in Vegas. I would have done it from a craps table myself. So if you had to scout your son's hockey, what would it be?
You know what? He's out here with a good team from Boston, playing in the big, the brick tournament. He's in the mix. He's a hard worker. He's a good two-way centerman, skates well. And, you know, they kind of use him in all situations too. So he's a really, really hard worker. Loves the game. It's his own passion too. It's not something that's from dad. I'm on the road a lot. It's funny. People always think, it must come from me, but, honestly, this is his love, and this is incredible out here. This setup that they have, this is a memory for the rest of his life. They do a great job with this tournament.
Yeah. And what great cities he gets to go to. Edmonton, Vegas. Last time I saw you, it was in Nashville at the end of the regular season. And you were there was it his tournament as well?
It was. I remember when I was his age, I was pretty lucky if I got to go to Worcester and maybe spend one night in a hotel.
That's awesome. And now he's going to Nashville, staying at, if I remember, the JW Marriott. My goodness. Even the Athletic couldn't put me up there. So that was pretty cool. Well, let's talk about the upcoming draft here, July 7th and 8th in Montreal. Man, for the second year in a row, the Wild have two first-round picks after yesterday's Kevin Fiala trade, picking pretty similarly to last year where you picked Jesper Wallstedt and Carson Lambos at 20 and 26. This year, 19 and 24, and then extra depth as well. You have two second-round picks at 47 and 56. So four picks in the top 56. If I'm not mistaken, your first draft with the Wild 2 years ago, you had five picks total. So this has got to be exciting for you as a staff.
This is really exciting, and it's great news. I love, being able to share that with the other scouts and let them know that we've got, able to acquire an extra pick, especially, being a first round pick, hard to get, not easy, a lot of that holds a lot of currency and teams, generally hold on to them. So back-to-back years with two first round picks is, a real tip of the cap to Bill and the work he's done and been able to, negotiate, deals and give us certainly, really good high quality swings at, continue to replenish the prospect pool and hopefully find some future Minnesota Wild players that can help us get where we want to be.
What kind of player do you think that you can get at 19 and 24?
We think, you know, looking at the draft, you know, we obviously are going to play all the scenarios out. You know, at 19, I mean, we're going to get, you know, could be a middle six forward, could be a top four defenseman. You know, probably, you know, we addressed the goalie need last year, so probably not an area that we'll focus on. You know, we're going to continue to look at best available. We want high side. We want someone that is going to be able to, you know, to continue to play, you know, in a position that we need them to be, you know, not a depth player. We're looking for someone who can help and make an impact for us.
I studied hours and hours and hours of video last week. You know, our taskmaster at the Athletic, Corey Pronman, sent me it. And I picked Kulich to go at 24. Never heard of him, actually, I'll be honest. So I just kind of threw a dart at the dartboard. But could I be right? I mean, what do you think of that player?
Hey, I mean, he had himself an incredible, you know, U18 World Championships in April. You know, plays in a men's league, really strong skater. Obviously, you know, the ability to shoot the puck and score the way he did too on the power play there. You know, I think he's going to draw a lot of attention based on his late performance in April. So again, you know, at 19, at 24, we're going to have to wait and see what others do, but not out of the realm of possibility.
Now, you know, if I turn out right, I'm going to tell everybody how hard I worked and to identify that and got my first ever mock draft correct. You know, obviously the Wild yesterday, Judd, they also acquired Brock Faber. And this is somebody that you scouted, I'm sure, in his draft 3 years ago as well. What did you see then from him? What did you see him develop into? And how much communication was there with Bill Guerin on this player prior to that trade?
Yeah, as an amateur staff, we certainly watched Brock when he was with the national team. And the first thing that stood out then too is his mobility. He's a real fluid skater, all directions, a quick acceleration, able to gap. And he's really turned himself into, you saw him play at the World Juniors in sort of a matchup role. He's just so easy to mobile. He's so mobile and can neutralize, stick in lane, gaps tight, smart puck manager. But you know, between when he was drafted and now, you've seen a great maturation in his game, competes really hard. You know, you saw it play against men at the Olympics and the success he had. So there's a lot of communication we share from the amateur side, you know, similar type of conversation, what we saw in him as a draft eligible player. And then, you know, that continues up the chain to our college scout and then our pro scouts that have seen him in some of, you know, maybe development camps or a rookie camp, as well as the World Juniors. So there's communication. It goes, you know, from amateur to college scouting, pro scouting, all the way up. And, you know, and then those discussions are, you know, lead to the execution.
Do you, you know, can somebody, the one area where he hasn't maybe developed yet, Judd, is offensively. Like, I watch him and he's a world-class skater. He's, defensively elite. You know, I watched a lot of those Michigan-Minnesota games last year, and those Michigan players had trouble getting through him. Yeah. But can a player at this stage in his career develop that offensive, you know, growth, or is this pretty much what he's going to be at the National Hockey League level?
No, he can always continue to grow. I mean, there's no question when you watch Brock play that he's a smart player, he's competitive, he's mobile, and he handles the puck well. So, you know, a lot of those things can lead to, you know, whether it be points in transition, right? You know, being able to exit the zone and do it comfortably. So he, you know, it might not be, you know, walking the offensive line or off the rush, but he can get into the offense for sure. And at the very least, it's going to generate our offense with his ability. The quicker we're out of our zone and the more we have the puck, the more offense we're going to generate. So this is not a player that is a, you know, defensive first player that's, you know, throwing pucks off the glass and hard rims. He's executing and with good clean outlets, that's always going to lead to more offense.
Before we get to you know, this year's draft and some Twitter questions as well, I wanted to ask you about just some of the last two drafts. You know, Marco Rossi is somebody that I think now that Kevin Fiala has been traded, really has a quality chance of making this team. You know, almost a point a game his rookie year with the Iowa Wild, his first real competitive hockey in a year after the unfortunate you know, issue that he had medically. You know, what do you expect from him this offseason to get himself into that position to make the team? And do you feel like he could be, you know, somebody that could be impactful even his rookie year in the National Hockey League?
Yeah, this year was great for Marco. I mean, obviously, you know, the first and foremost was being healthy, being able to play a full season, to go through the rigors, you know, to be able to trust your body that it's going to respond, that you're healthy every day when you get up and playing and you know, coming over here, playing a full year in the American Hockey League, the demands of it, the demands on your body, the emotional, the ups and downs, the some success, hitting a wall. Like, this was all critical for him. And it's all inventory that he takes home and for the offseason. And knowing Marco, he's going to put everything into getting over that hump, taking the next step, being better at anything that he felt, you know, needed attention. And I think he'll come, he'll be here and be ready, and he'll put his best foot forward. But I think it's pretty clear. We've seen it. The opportunity is there, but you got to earn it. Right. You know, so, mm-hmm. And I think he understands that too. There's nothing's going to be given, and, you know, he can come in and knock the wall down and be on the roster. And I do think he when he's there, he's going to have a chance to impact. He's an incredibly smart two-way centerman with he can play in all situations. He can generate offense. He can be trusted on the penalty kill. He can win draws. So, you know, but again, when you take that next step, you find new hurdles that you have to get over.
Murat Khuznadinov, he was somebody, you know, did it surprise you when he resigned in the KHL, and how was his year there? And, you know, I mean, is this a, you know, something that maybe doesn't exactly come as you know, a blindside to you guys, because at a minimum, it gives him two more years of development over there.
Yeah. And he's playing in a top league, and he's playing, you know, in all situations. He's, you know, on the top two lines, getting lots of ice time early on, especially. You know, I'm okay. I'm certainly okay with where he is. They've developed a lot of good hockey players over there, and he's playing against some really, really high quality players. So, you know, we're excited about his development, his path, and what the future looks real bright for him.
How about, I mean, you add O'Rourke, Hunt, you have, you know, Jack Parrott last year, you just added Brock Faber, Simon Johansson was just signed, you guys have Kalen Addison. You drafted Carson Lambos last year. I mean, your blue line prospects right now seem like it's as full as any team in the league.
Yeah, we're excited. I mean, it's, you know, it's not necessarily by design. It's, you know, when we're looking at players, it, you know, it's how things have happened at the draft and where players have been. But we're thrilled with all the defensemen. They all bring, you know, sort of a different wrinkle in their game. Also, like, you know, the years they had in terms of, you know, for Lambos, a long run with a young Winnipeg team, the minutes he's playing, the situations he's in, you know, same with O'Rourke. He spends a year in the American Hockey League, goes back to the Sioux and is the captain, which he was as a 17-year-old, and, you know, playing in all situations, getting lots of touches, the skill development keeps coming. You know, Hunt, you know, all these guys right in the mix for, you know, Canada's World Junior team, you know, minus an injury in the last period of the last game before the selection. So, you know, these guys are all playing high level hockey and having great success. Jack Peart goes into, you know, into school, playing with older players, and assimilates right away on a team that was, you know, a high ranked team. You know, I think the start of the year, I think, as, you know, the number one in the poll. So he's going in and making an impact right away on an experienced, good team, and taking great strides. So it is, it's great to see. And that doesn't mean that we wouldn't be opposed to adding another piece into that pool. I don't think you can ever have enough.
Yeah. So, I mean, so we just did a media Zoom with the Wild beat writers, but you just basically, I asked you that question. I mean, it is not a guarantee now that because you have the goalie of the future, that you have what, 7-8 blue line prospects, that you're just going to take a center or forwards with those two first round picks.
No, I mean, and you know, and these are all young players too, right? I mean, we may watch a player all year and feel he's going to be a center, is a center at the junior level. And it might not, you know, it might not come to fruition. He may move to the wing when he turns pro. So, you know, we can do as much as we can, but roster composition happens, you know, at a different time.
Right. Makes sense. Two more questions on previous draft picks, and then we'll move on to Twitter questions. Jesper Walstedt, great year. He's coming to Iowa. How first, can you sort of dissect his year for us, or analyze his year for us, and what do you expect his first full year at the professional level?
He had a great year, especially the start in the fall. You know, due to an injury, he really got a chance to grab the number one job, and was great with it, was confident. Most nights was, a 17 of 18, 17 stops on 18 shots. But the level he's playing at, the mental preparation, being a number one in that league, even early on in a year, I think gave him great confidence. It was unfortunate that World Juniors didn't happen. I think that was going to be a really, real big opportunity for him at December in Edmonton. I thought he was coming in with full of confidence and was going to be on a team that was going to rely on him. So, the second half of the year got into a situation where, team's making a long run and went with a more experienced veteran guy. And that happens with goaltenders, so I'm looking forward to seeing him in Iowa and getting the reps and coming over here. And I expect, he's a pro. He's played at the professional level. He's played a ton of international. So I don't think the stage is going to be too big for him at all.
How long does somebody like him take to get to maybe this, to get to a point where you all as an organization will feel comfortable at a minimum him being an NHL backup?
It's hard to say, because you don't want to rush someone into a backup position, right? Especially as a goaltender, you want them getting the reps, you want them playing games, you want them seeing shots, especially at this age. So I don't think that's it's a rush to get them up. Right now you want to get them in and getting as many games as possible, and in the right situations too.
You mentioned the World Juniors. I mean, this has got to be an exciting World Juniors for you, the potential of five defensemen on the United States and Canada and a goaltender for Team Sweden.
Absolutely. This will be exciting. I mean, something new for everyone, World Juniors in August, but I think we'll be represented, and actually even at that point, maybe 19 and 24 could be in the fold as well. So it could be an exciting summer for Wild fans and for us and our development staff to see some of the gains that were made and be well represented.
Just lastly on draft picks, how gut wrenching was it when you learned of Pavel Novak's diagnosis and what's without revealing too much to invade his privacy? Like, do you still feel like there's a chance that we're going to see him eventually back in a Wild uniform?
Yeah, I mean, these are really young men, and to have to deal with something like this is heartbreaking. But I will say, Pav's one of those guys that he's got a great mindset for this, and he's ready to take on the challenge. And absolutely, we're gonna be with him every step of it and continue to support him, and we still believe in him for sure.
One player that really intrigued me when I was actually looking at the mock drafts was Mishnichenko, who I think I'm pronouncing that right. He looked like he was a player that was going to be really at the top of the draft, and then unfortunately he too was diagnosed with cancer. How does he's just gone through treatment. How do scouts now sort of weigh this when wanting to maybe take a really talented player but not being very certain about his health situation?
Yeah, I mean, I think every team's going to approach it differently, but you seek medical advice for sure, and weigh the risks. It's a really, really unfortunate situation. Ivan is arguably one of the coming into the year was probably considered in the top five, if not more. So every team's going to take the information and assess it and make their best decision with it.
If you're cool with it, Judd, I'm going to go to Twitter questions. If you have to go, I never asked you what your time constraints were. Just wave at me. And I'll end the podcast immediately. Tim asks, why is this year's draft considered somewhat weak by some? Does it have anything to do with the missed underage year of delayed development? What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I wouldn't refer to this draft as a weak draft. I think there are players littered throughout the draft. There always are. If anything, there might be some later depth or more depth to this draft in the later rounds. And that's just given just purely from league playing this year, more visibility for us to go out and see the players. But yeah, there might be something to a missed year and a little bit of time missed with development. So some of these players, you know, may be tracking a little bit behind other years, but I think in the end, we'll still look back on this draft and be happy with the results.
I'm always hesitant to ask these type of questions to a chief scout that probably wants to keep a lot of things close to the vest. But John asks, who do you think is the best under the radar player in this year's draft and why? Can you say that even if generally? Like, are you going to find a 108-point guy in the fifth round?
That's the beauty. That's the beauty of the NHL draft, right? We're dealing with, we're, you know, 17, 18 year old, you know, sometimes these guys are at different stages of their development, physical maturation, mental maturation. So that's, you can still find that game changer, the franchise changer in the fifth round. Like we're certainly living proof of that. So right now, so I can't really reveal who the under the radar guy is, but as the draft unfolds, you'll probably see who we think is.
You know, I am always amazed at the draft because like every year it just feels like, you know, like Andre Palat, right? Four picks from last in his draft. Jake Middleton was the last pick in his draft. Kim Janssen, Hans Janssen, Patrick Nyquist. I mean, it is not, you don't just have to get guys in the first couple of rounds to make it a successful draft.
No. And sometimes I think you see some of the later guys, that are having the success, the players that you mentioned, it usually comes from a scout having a really strong feel for someone. They've done a lot of work on them and they really go to bat and say, look, we, you know, if we have that at late pick, this is the guy that I want based on everything I've seen. And we've done the interviews and we've talked to him. But sometimes it's because you've done that, gone that extra mile with that player that, and your hunch was right.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. Mike Amundson asks, is there any way to see past the size, skills, and smarts of a player to project how they might rise to the occasion in the playoffs?
Yeah, during the year when we're scouting players, we look for, you know, tells in their game, whether it be a situation, whether, you know, how are they deployed? Do they use, are they able to, you know, rise to the occasion, or do they score big goals? Are they involved with generating offense, you know, late in games, you know, on the road in a tougher environment? So yeah, we try to assess players, you know, that way. And some just actually don't get the opportunity, you know, until it's actually presented to them.
Ben Hurdle asks, how do you feel? I think you alluded to this a little bit, but how do you feel about the center depth in this year's draft?
Center's always is a tough position to fill. You know, there's a lot of demands, a lot of good junior players that play center now that, you know, sometimes it's maybe they can't handle the physical two-way play of it, or, you know, the pace is too much. So yeah, centers are always a premium and hard to find.
Dirty Dan asks, was becoming a head of scouting and being in charge of the draft your goal all along, or do you hope to one day become a GM?
I love what I'm doing. I, you know, and when I got into this business and scouting, I didn't envision myself in this position either. I just enjoyed being at the rink, watching games, evaluating players, sharing my opinion, the camaraderie of scouting and the hockey community. So yeah, I love what I'm doing. And to be honest, like there's no, you have a clear start and finish, you know, so when we get going with the next group of players, you know, in August at the Hlinka tournament, you know, there's no, you know, yes, you're in some of the same cities over and over again, but every draft has its new challenges, new players, new evaluations. So there's never any dull moment for me. I really enjoy it.
If you've read my Judd Brackett profile when he was first hired with the Wild, you'll know that he started as a sports writer with McKean's magazine. So there's still hope for me to cross the aisle and do what I've always wanted to do. That's run a team.
So there you go.
Wouldn't I be the greatest GM? I would make a trade after probably every single game. Like any player that pissed me off, just like, you're out of here. So that's why I couldn't do it. I have no patience. Chris Noble asks, how far before the draft does he really want to have his draft list locked in? Obviously, it is constantly changing, but is there a certain goal for when you have to at least some semblance of a plan in motion? I mean, is it done?
Yes, we're done. I mean, we'll get to Montreal and you know, we'll do some hypotheticals. We'll do a mock draft. We'll, you know, if this scenario happens, how are we going to react to it? So, you know, it's more situational, but based on the list that we have, Typically we like to have the framework of a final list done going into the combine. And then we, you know, if we need to readjust based on, you know, either a physical ailment or something we learned there, you know, we'll continue to talk about it. But for the most part, you know, we want to keep it close to having a finished product when the season's over, right? We don't want to get too far away from when players played their last games and it's real fresh as to what we thought of them. So we talk all the time, and then we have, you know, sort of monthly meetings, even on the road when we're together too. So we like to have a list done, you know, going into the combine, and then just make small tweaks from there.
At the combine, I mean, have you ever had a situation where an interview really skyrocketed a player or dropped a player dramatically?
We try not to let it like really skyrocket, like one way or the other, any extremes. Maybe small tinkering. Hey, you know, we had some concerns about this. We pushed on it at the combine, didn't get a great response. You know, it's more that it affirms what we think we already knew at the combine. But yeah, you can help yourself or hurt yourself there, but not dramatically.
I love this question from Garrett Pollard. It says, year after year, we see undersized players fall in the draft who continuously tend to prove themselves in the National Hockey League, such as DeBrincat and Caulfield. I mean, we could add guys like Braden Point. We could add Kucherov. We could add Jarrett Spurgeon, right? He basically asks, why do you still think that is? I mean, why do you think that? Like almost do scouts need to readjust and realize that this is now a game where small men can actually really function well?
Yeah, I think it's still, you see it every year. It's the largest bias in terms of drafting size is sort of the biggest wild card going in to drafts. When we try to project where players are going to be picked, you know, the one wild card every time is, well, this guy, you know, maybe he slides because of size. So there's definitely a bias against it. But it's, you know, like you said, you don't have to look too far to see undersized players having great success.
Shane Wright's been the perennial number one, like for years, it feels like, since he got the exceptional status in the CHL. Andrew Betts wants to know if you had, and now, of course, like there always is at the end, there's always a debate who should go number one. It doesn't actually look like, you know, reports out that Montreal might take him. You know, he said Andrew wants to know if Judd had the number one overall pick, who would you draft? Are you comfortable saying that?
We can't give that. It's a good debate, though. It's been good discussion all year.
Can you talk about the three guys there, Cooley and Wright?
The success they've all had is in different degrees. Wright has clearly established himself in the OHL, especially as an underage. Went to Texas last year with Hockey Canada, the U18, and performed very well there. You know, he's a proven scorer, centerman. Like Wright, really, he brings a lot there. I mean, you don't have to look too far to see what Slefkovsky's done this year. Done it against men, done it at the Olympics, came back from the Olympics and did it in Liga, and, you know, had a great Ivan Hlinka to start the year. Cooley, you know, elite skater, in two-way game, leads that national program. I mean, these are great debate, and it'll go on long past Montreal too, I think.
Nick wants to know if Yurov will be available at 19. Do you think? Do you like him?
I don't know where he's gonna go. We're gonna have to wait and see. There's 18 teams in front of us, so
I will say this, do you think that there's gonna be any, like, teams are always concerned about drafting Russians regardless, because just the what we just saw with Khuznetdinov, guys going back like Nichushkin and Radulov. You know, will what's going on in the world today make it a little more difficult to take a Russian player, or do you think that will have nothing to do with it, that maybe the same concerns that have always been there will just be there normally?
Yeah, I think every team, again, is going to approach this situation differently. Everyone's cognizant of what's going on in the world, and you know, and they're going to weigh the risks and rewards of a player, you know, whether it's an injury, whether it's you know, signability, whether there's a war going on. So it's going to be an internal debate and discussion from amongst 32 teams, and you know, we'll obviously see what the effect is in terms of where players go when we get to Montreal.
Final couple questions for you, Judd, I promise. Vaughn asks, do you make your draft list into tiers and then select from the tiers, or it's straight number 1 to 80 or something like that?
We have varying, without going too, we don't really want to give away too much, right, of what we do, but we do a little bit of both. We have some straight ordering, you know, next best player available, and then we do also do some tiering of players too.
Got you. Walter Norris wants to know, what's the single most important opportunity or occasion to form a solid opinion on a player in a calendar year? Like, is there a final threshold or a tournament, or it's just...
No, it's got to be a culmination of everything. I think that's probably a dangerous way to do it if you put too much stock in one situation.
Makes sense. Let's see. Senator Stackhouse wants to know, I don't know if this is a real senator, how much herd mentality is there when a player slides on the draft? So he's basically saying, if teams are passing on a player, does that make now a player team more likely to also pass on that player because that player's fallen?
It shouldn't. If you've done all your work and you believe in your process and the information that you've gathered, then if a player is sliding, despite what other teams are doing, you should have the fortitude and the integrity of your list to follow it.
Marty wants to know, what's your favorite scouting trip that you've ever been on?
Great question. Favorite scouting trip. Man, that's it. Texas was fun last year. Maybe it was partly just the relief of actually getting out on the road and seeing some international play too. But I'm a huge fan of any trip that involves Kelowna, British Columbia. So
I've never been there, and I've heard that it's incredible there. Yeah. Have you had any hellacious experiences? Like, I used to do stories on some of those scouts back in the 90s that we used to have to drive through Siberia or snowstorms. And,
I've had some tough with missed flights and cancellations. Actually, even coming out here for this tournament, the majority of our team, the parents went through some sort of delay, cancellation. It's travel hasn't been easy this last year and a half.
Well, I'm getting all these notifications right now about our going to Montreal next week. I'm starting to worry that, right now it's not easy flying. Last question. This is a fun one. Bryce wants to know, where's your go-to place for a summer vacation and any hobbies you like to do? Summer's probably not the time that you get a lot of time off.
Yeah. Well, I mean, summer for me is Cape Cod. So that's my destination and beach town but again, brother and I have two restaurants there, so stay busy with that. That's their busiest time of year is July and August. So, but hobbies, not a golfer. I do enjoy fishing, but nothing. I don't do anything enough to call it a hobby.
Do you know what you got going on July 27th? Tell me it's in your calendar.
Oh, it's in there.
Nice. You want to tell everybody what's happening?
I got an alert on the 26th and a reminder to have everything ready. We got a big VIP coming in.
Yep, exactly. I want the nicest bottle of wine, the greatest cut of steak, everything. I'm getting to actually go and check out The Port, which is one of Judd and his brother's restaurants in Cape Cod. I've actually never been to Cape Cod, so I'm really looking forward to it. And we're going to sit down and work on a big Judd Brackett feature. So looking forward to that. I won't drag out the recording equipment and put you through that.
We've ordered great weather. We've got some choice steaks for you. So
nice. You know, that's actually going to be an exciting couple days for me. I'm actually coming to you from Austria, where I'm actually going to visit Marco Rossi's hometown for a couple days. And I'm going to go to his hockey school and things like that. And I'm flying back to go to a wedding in Newport, Rhode Island. And I'm making a little pit stop in Cape Cod. So it's going to be a fun couple days. Probably not the healthiest couple days, but just know I might be a little jet lagged.
That's great. That's great stops. Newport's awesome too.
Yeah. And I'll give you a firsthand update on Marco Rossi's training, on him getting ready for training camp. So
good.
Hey, Judd, you are always the best. I'm really looking forward to seeing you, again, July 7th and 8th, the first 2 days or the only 2 days of the draft in Montreal. And I know I started the interview with this, but I mean, just how exciting will it be to actually get on that stage and announce these picks?
We're thrilled. I mean, it's been a long time coming, and it's not just for us. Like I'm excited for the players. They deserve this opportunity to share it with their families, to be on stage, to be rewarded for their hard work. It was the biggest thing that's been missing the last couple of years is having a chance to see the excitement, the smiles, the tears, these kids have put in a lot of hours and a lot of time, and I'm just excited, and I'm sure it's going to be a full house and a great crowd too. So yep,
no doubt.
It's going to be a great venue.
I'm excited. And we're going to have about 50 people from The Athletic there as well. So it'll be fun. So definitely read our coverage in The Athletic. Judd, looking forward to seeing you next week and seeing you get on that stage. And thanks for doing this, Judd.
Anytime. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks. That is Judd Brackett, Director of Amateur Scouting for the Minnesota Wild. And here's a word from one of our sponsors. Well, thanks to Judd Brackett for joining Straight from the Source this week. And as you know, there are podcasts all throughout our Athletic network. And Ian Mendez and Down Goes Brown have the Thursday edition of the Athletic Hockey Show with their guest, Jesse Granger, who is our Vegas Golden Knights beat writer. So make sure to tune into that and follow us on your favorite podcast platform and leave a rating and review. And right now, get an annual subscription to The Athletic for just $1 a month for 6 months when you visit theathletic.com/straight from the source. Thanks, everybody.